You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
From the rolling bluffs of the Driftless region to the pristine shorelines of Superior in Michigan, from the Northwoods to the Kettle Moraine, Civic Media broadcasts across all of Wisconsin. For all of Wisconsin. Take a trip with us across the radio network to hear from communities throughout the state. This is the Civic Media Spotlight.
Welcome in to Hour 2 of the Civic Media Spotlight. We go now to the Maggie Dawn Show, and this week Maggie welcomed on Jill Rosenthal, Director of Public Health Policy at the Center for American Progress. They discuss what the proposed cuts to the NIH would do to the economy and rural hospitals and clinics in Wisconsin.
Welcome, everybody, to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. It is 3 p.m. on Monday, and so it is time to be joined by one of our amazing guests for the Center for American Progress Action Fund. Today we've got Jill Rosenthal. She is the Director of Public Health for CAPAF. Welcome to the Maggie Dawn Show, Jill. Thanks so much for making time. Let's get right into it. The Trump administration is posing pretty broad-reaching and deep cuts, as well as targeting certain staff at the National Institutes of Health. First of all, let's baseline set. What is the NIH? Like, what do they do, in case people aren't familiar with the NIH? What does it all encompass?
Yeah, thanks for having me, Maggie. I'm happy to start there. So the National Institutes of Health is part of the Department of Health and Human Services, and it is the largest funder of biomedical research in our country. And that is biomedical research is studies of the human body to develop new ways to prevent and treat disease.
So it's important, shall we say. It's incredibly important both for our nation's research capacity, but also how that research capacity ultimately impacts the health of everyone, you and me and our families. Am I getting that right?
Absolutely. So cuts to National Institutes of Health or NIH harms public health. It harms science innovation. It harms all of our health and those that we love. And it actually even has implications for economic security. So it's extremely concerning.
Explain that to people who maybe, you know, a lot of my conservative friends tend to support more conservative ideas or policies because it's good for business. So can you help people fill in those dots between research capacity impacting public health and actually being a driver of economic growth, or with Trump's planned cuts and also purges, how we could actually be harming our overall competitiveness and really slowing down or hindering our economic growth?
Yeah, so the NIH-funded research spans more than 300 health topics. So they're researching issues like cancer, diabetes, heart disease, mental health and addiction, aging conditions like dementia, all kinds of different topics. And, you know, that affects all of us. It affects those of us who have illness, those who maybe could get an illness. It affects our family and friends. So it has huge implications in terms of what we know about diseases and the kinds of treatments that we can develop to cure people, and any kind of, you know, prevention. It affects medication development, all kinds of things. And there's lots of jobs related to this kind of work. So the estimates are that NIH funding supported 410,000 jobs nationally and fueled about $93 billion in economic spending in the past year. So, you know, it's a huge impact on the economy. And the estimates are that the economic benefit of NIH spending is more than twice the investment that we make through the appropriation. So it has an impact on research institutions, hospitals that do research. It impacts, you know, again, like drug development. It trains our workforce for the future. So there's all kinds of economic impacts.
just wanted to make sure that we repeated these key facts, folks. I'm talking with Jill Rosenthal. She's the Director of Public Health for the Center for American Progress Action Fund, CAPAF, joins me every Monday at 3 p.m. Jill noted that the NIH helps fund over 410,000 jobs nationwide and impacts over $93 billion in economic or commercial activity. And from a return on investment perspective, is thought to provide basically $2 for every buck of taxpayer dollars that go to the NIH in terms of economic activity and growth. And we're talking today about the NIH with Ms. Rosenthal because Trump is proposing to make incredibly drastic both funding and personnel cuts to the NIH. All of this in turn will impact your family's well-being. When we look beyond health and, again, these particular economic engine impacts, let's just talk very narrowly about direct impacts here in the state of Wisconsin. Can you tell us a bit about the volume of NIH grants that come into the state of Wisconsin, Jill, and the jobs that it supports here in Wisconsin?
Yeah, so in Wisconsin, in specifically, the state receives almost $600 million in NIH grants, at least did in the last year. And, you know, that's medical research that would be at risk. And that pays for over 7,000 jobs in Wisconsin and accounted for almost $1.5 billion in economic activity in Wisconsin in 1 year. So these are pretty significant numbers. Again, it's jobs, it's economic activity. Some of the research that actually has been happening in Wisconsin are issues around kidney transplants, childhood chronic complex conditions and diseases, prostate and ovarian cancer, the impact of out-of-pocket caps on medication. So, you know, all kinds of research, important issues that are being researched in Wisconsin and, you know, a dramatic impact on the economy. And I think one other thing that's worth pointing out is that the cuts are indiscriminate. They're not related to anything to do with the science or the impact or the usefulness. And they are likely to be cut in areas in particular that the health secretary doesn't agree with. So for instance, there's a concern about cuts in drug development. So that would be issues like heart medications and also issues related to infectious disease research. So in Wisconsin in particular, there were more than $52 million in infectious disease research grants going into the state just in 1 year.
Wow, truly staggering numbers. A couple of things are jumping out at me here, Jill. Just again, to summarize some of these key statistics, Wisconsin, at least in the last year, received upwards of $600 million in NIH grants. That directly supports nearly 8,000 good-paying, family-supporting jobs in the state of Wisconsin and is responsible for approximately $1.5 billion in economic activity here in Wisconsin. But to make the point really plain, Jill, you look at the University of Wisconsin, the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, the Medical College of Wisconsin, Marquette University, like our biggest academic institutions, all are beneficiaries of significant grant money from the NIH. And as the recipient of a degree from both degrees from both Marquette University and the University of Wisconsin at Madison, I'd be remiss if I didn't point out those academic institutions themselves. Not only are they educating our kids, but they are absolute cornerstones to Wisconsin remaining a desirable place for business to happen. They're absolute economic cornerstones to Wisconsin's overall competitiveness. hurting the University of Wisconsin system, defunding some of their research efforts, hurting Marquette University, hurting the Medical College of Wisconsin, will have a negative impact about whether or not people want to move here and stay here, not only get educated and trained here, but stay here. And it hurts our overall competitiveness as a state as well. Or am I overstating that, Joe? I mean, to me, the impact, especially in some of our key research academic institutions here in the state, would be devastating.
Yeah, that is a really excellent point. You know, these are bedrock institutions in our communities, and it hurts hospitals all over the country, research institutions all over the country of all kinds of sizes. So some of them are quite large, some of them are small. And, you know, we know what rural hospitals mean in our rural communities. And so to cut funding that makes it more difficult for those institutions to continue to run is really deeply concerning.
Yeah, I just want to point out that one of the top NIH-funded institutions here in the state of Wisconsin includes the Marshfield Clinic. Again, you start, if you are in a rural area in Wisconsin, if you have a shortage of healthcare outlets, of hospitals with level one emergency centers, hey, take a look at, is your facility receiving NIH dollars? We could be looking at an increasing acute crisis of available care, especially in rural areas in Wisconsin. We're already feeling those pinches. So folks, if you're listening from upstate or the western or northeastern part of the state, go check out, hey, which one of your local medical facilities, especially hospitals with emergency departments, are receiving NIH funding. Donald Trump is looking not to help the crisis of care in rural areas, but in fact, to exacerbate it. I've got with me this half hour, Jill Rosenthal. She's the Director of Public Health with the Center for American Progress Action Fund. They join me every Monday at 3 p.m. If you've got a question for Jill or I, 855-75-CIVIC, that's 855-752-4842. I also want to let each and every one of you know that we've got some resources about the NIH's impacts here in Wisconsin. We're going to put those website links in our show notes for today so you can check out that data and information yourselves. It includes citations for these fundamental facts. $650+ million in a year comes into the state of Wisconsin from the NIH. It supports nearly 8,000 jobs and helps spur $1.5 billion of economic activity in Wisconsin. And again, if you're finding it hard to access healthcare affordably and when you need it in your area of the state, this ain't going to make it better, only worse. When we come back, we're going to pick up our conversation with Jill. Join us, 855-752-4842. That's 855-75-CIVIC. My name is Maggie Dawn. You are listening to The Maggie Dawn Show right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked.
The Maggie Dawn Show is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs across the network weekday afternoons from 2 until 4. To learn more about this show and all of Civic Media's programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Next up on the Civic Media Spotlight, we take a trip up to Wausau for the Chad Holmes Show. This week, Chad spoke with Judge Susan Crawford, current candidate for the Wisconsin Supreme Court race in April. He asks her about her judicial philosophy and what it means to have equal protection under the law.
And welcome back, Chad Holmes Show, 98.9 WXCO. The time is 9:21. Coming up later today, we're going to get a visit here, a campaign visit here in Wausau. One of the candidates for the state Supreme Court, Judge Susan Crawford, will be paying a visit to our community. In fact, she's on her way now, and we're very happy as she makes the trek to spend a few minutes with Judge Crawford. And first of all, Judge, thank you for spending a little time with us.
Well, good morning, Chad. It is a pleasure to be here.
Well, number one, let's get right into it, because one thing that I noticed, I was talking yesterday on the program, actually, it was kind of funny that when I get home from work and when I want to get away from it all, I like to watch YouTube. And I see a lot of ads going up against you on YouTube, a lot of money already in this race. But I wanted to get through all of those commercials and everything else and ask a simple question. What is your judicial philosophy? What would you bring to the state Supreme Court that that we aren't finding out in a lot of these 15 or 30-second commercials that are bombarding us?
Yeah. Well, thanks for that, Chad. You know, I'm bringing common sense and a sense of right from wrong. So my judicial philosophy is pretty simple. I always make sure I get the facts right, because I think the truth is really important in our justice system, and make sure that I'm applying the law fairly and impartially. And I really pay attention to the people in my courtroom and what their dispute is, and just try to get to a practical, common sense decision under the law that protects their rights. So
I think that is very important. Another question. I'm sorry, you kind of broke up there. I thought you had stopped here. I'm sorry about that.
on the road. Sorry about that.
No problem at all. One thing for myself over the years, and I've talked to people about judicial races over the years, the idea of equal justice under law. And one thing that kind of concerned me in comments made by the former Attorney General, Mr. Schimmel, was talking about the January 6th folks and being concerned about that they were being treated unfairly. And my thought is there have been a lot of people that, away from those folks who I thought there was a lot of evidence that they did what they did, that are not treated fairly within the system. How do you look at the idea of equal justice under law? How close are we in our society to getting to a point where we do have equal justice under law?
Well, it's something that I really work for every day in my courtroom as a judge. So, you know, if somebody is sitting there in the courtroom with a high-priced lawyer, you know, backing them up, making their arguments for them, or if they're sitting in court all by themselves presenting their own case, I really try to make sure there's an even playing field and that everybody gets their day in court. And sometimes that means for the person that doesn't have a lawyer that, you know, I need to give them some instructions on how the procedure works in the court, just to make sure that they have that opportunity. So I think it's really important. I do think that we continue to see inequalities in our justice system, and largely that is because some people just don't have the same resources that others do to make their cases. You know, there's a real scarcity of lawyers in our state who are available at an affordable cost to help people, and that's really concerning to me, but I do everything I can in my own courtroom to make sure that everybody gets a fair shake.
Talk a little bit about your background, because right now you say you are running a courtroom as a judge, but you've had plenty of other experiences. You've seen the system from many different angles, haven't you?
I sure have. Yep. And, you know, I grew up in Chippewa Falls, so that's kind of where I got my values and what made me the person I am today. But I started my legal career as a prosecutor at the Wisconsin Department of Justice, handling the toughest felony cases all the way to the Wisconsin Supreme Court. And later represented people in our courtrooms across the state, often when their rights had been taken away by the government. So this is, you know, I was representing voters. I represented public school teachers. I also represented Planned Parenthood of Wisconsin and their doctors to make sure that they could provide health care services to women. So that's all important part of my experience. And I've now been on the bench as a judge for 6.5 years or so, and have handled every kind of case that comes through our trial courts, our circuit courts. And I just have really broad experience and deep experience, and I think that'll serve me well on the Supreme Court.
On April 1st, and even before then, with early voting, people will see two names on the ballot, yourself and Brad Schimmel. What are the differences as you talk to people, as you talk about yourself, but also there's always a comparison. What makes you the better choice in this race?
Yeah. Well, you know, as I just described kind of my career, I've always worked hard to protect the rights of Wisconsinites under our laws and under our Constitution, make sure we have safe communities, common sense principles, like, somebody, whether they're a person or whether they're a corporation, if they've harmed our community, I believe they need to be held accountable. The big contrast, I think, with between me and my opponent, Brad Schimmel, is that he's a partisan politician. He's somebody that has an extreme agenda, and he's trying to bring a political agenda to the Wisconsin Supreme Court. And I think we're seeing that definitely play out in this race. He's now got Elon Musk spending millions of dollars backing him, and Elon Musk has openly said that he wants Brad Schimmel on the Supreme Court to advance the Trump agenda. So, that's not what the Wisconsin Supreme Court is about. It's about making fair, impartial decisions and protecting the rights of Wisconsinites under our laws. And that's what I intend to do on the Wisconsin Supreme Court, not to pursue some political agenda.
And finally, I guess in our final moments here, how hard is it to fight back against that kind of money? When the richest person in the world decides they don't want you on this in this position, I imagine as you go put your head on the pillow once in a while, you think, how did I get myself into a situation like this?
Yeah, when I was a kid growing up in Chippewa Falls, I just never could have imagined that I would be fighting the richest man in the world to protect justice in Wisconsin. It's just, kind of mind-blowing. But it's worth a fight, and they're, going to probably continue to dump money into this campaign, running these, terrible false ads against me. And we're just going to, I'm going to keep my head up and keep getting the word out and using what I call people power, the grassroots, to help people understand what the real choice in this race is all about.
Judge Susan Crawford, I appreciate you as you're on the road spending a few minutes with us. It's terrific you're coming here to Central Wisconsin to talk to the voters here as well. But best of luck on your travels, and hopefully we'll be able to talk again.
Oh, thanks so much, Chad.
That is Judge Susan Crawford, again, candidate for the Wisconsin State Supreme Court. We're going to take a timeout, and they can come right back. We have an information update straight ahead. News, weather, sports, entertainment all coming up, and then more of the Chad Holmes Show, 98.9 WXCO.
The Chad Holmes Show is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs on WXCO weekday mornings from 8 until 10. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows.
We return you now to the Civic Media Spotlight, and up next is Nightlight with Pete Schwabe. The Schwabinator this week welcomed on Jamie McShane, an actor who has starred in shows including 1923 and Bosch. Jamie shares his experience on the set of the series 1923, a new series called Task, and his experience working on Hostage with Bruce Willis.
All right. Welcome back. Great to have you with me on this Wednesday night edition of Nightlight as we broadcast statewide from beautiful downtown Green Bay on another balmy day. We are so lucky. It is my pleasure, ladies and gentlemen. My next guest is an unbelievably talented actor. You can catch his work on the show Wednesday on Netflix or the new season of 1923, which just dropped the other day. It's my pleasure to welcome actor Jamie McShane. Hey, buddy.
Hey, Pete. How you doing?
God, I love that hat. I can't pull that look off.
You're not bold enough, kid.
Maybe that's it. I always thought it was the way my hair looked. Like, I'll try those on when I go into a store and, someone will just look at me, whoever I'm with, one of my kids, and just shake their head. It's like, okay, thanks. it looks good though, man. How are you?
Thank you. I'm good. Thank you. How you doing?
Doing great. Where are you right now? Are you sitting outside in your yard?
I am. It's a balmy beautiful. Like 85 degrees out here.
God.
Yeah, it got hot today.
What part of LA are you in these days?
Burbank.
Oh yeah, that's right. I knew that.
Yeah, I love it there. Right here.
Yeah, that's a great good for you. I'm glad you can sit outside and enjoy the weather. and I have to wear.
I'm sorry you can't.
I'm sorry I have to wear long underwear into May. Hey, so you're on Wednesday on Netflix. I have to ask you, when you're on a Netflix show, do they give you a discount on Netflix, which is like so expensive now?
No, they double charge me. no, I don't get any discounts. I get some nice gifts occasionally, but yeah.
Oh,
no, Netflix
good.
Has been very good to me.
Yeah, no, they've gotten. Yeah, you're out there, buddy. All right, so I think the last time we talked, you were in Ireland, and you said you were part of a show that you thought was maybe the best show you've ever been a part of, or one of the most inspiring things you've worked on. Can
Both,
you
yeah.
give us any more details yet? Or is
Yeah. So I was in Philadelphia for 6 months last year, and we were filming a new show for HBO. It'll be out in September, and it's called Task, like a task force.
Okay.
And Mark Ruffalo is the lead. It's got an amazing cast, Tom Pelfrey, Sam Keeley, Allison Oliver. There's another girl who's brilliant. I'll think of it.
Yeah.
It was just, the writing was so good. The acting was so good. Everyone was so nice. Have you ever seen Mayor of Easttown with Kate Winslet?
Oh, yeah. I love that show.
So Brad Inglesby, who created that show, and he wrote every episode of it, this is his next show.
Oh, I love that.
So he writes every episode. He's on set all the time, and he's probably one of the nicest humans I've ever met.
That is so great, and I loved Mayor of Easttown. I thought it just like it's one of those shows that you just kept watching, and it just kept getting better episode by episode.
Yeah.
There was something, and then you couldn't turn it off, and it was just so great. I want to tell you, and I mentioned this to you in our text exchange a few days ago, but I had the actor Glenn Morshower was on the show.
Yeah, I know Glenn.
Yeah, about a week ago, and I mentioned your name because you guys have the same credits. In some cases, but you know how that works. You don't know if you're on the set the same day. I didn't know if your paths had crossed. And he said, yes. He goes, I know Jamie. And he said, and before I really knew him, he was in a film, I think it was Hostage. You played a character called Joe Mack. And he said, he is one of the best actors I've ever seen. And I'm basing that on one scene, Jamie. And it wasn't from that movie, Hostage.
That's very sweet. That's very sweet. It was... It was the opening of the film. It's a phone conversation between Bruce Willis and I. Bruce is a SWAT negotiator, and I'm holding my wife and kid hostage at gunpoint. And
bastard.
Thank you. And, it was a big, big break for me. It was like, you know, 7 pages of script or whatever, you know, 6 minute, 7 minute scene. Unfortunately, you only see my face for like 5 seconds. I thought they were going to edit it back and forth between Bruce and I. And it was just always on Bruce and the SWAT team. And then for a little pop, you saw me. But Glenn got to be there for the filming of it. And that was very nice of him to say.
It was very nice of him to say. And I would relay your message, except he and I had a huge falling out right after he told me about that. So I'm never going to talk to him. No, I'm just kidding. It's funny you say that because I think I met you. We used to take our kids to the same park, and that's where we met and became friends. And I remember you telling me, I think you had just shot that, or it was like 2006 maybe when we met or something, and you had just done that scene, and you were talking about how cool it was.
It was. I filmed it. Maura was pregnant with Luke. Luke's 20. So, yeah, I guess it was around 2004 we filmed it, I guess.
Okay.
It probably came out around, something like that.
That's so great. All right, so speaking of all of your amazing credits, buddy, let's talk about 1923. I feel like I like half the Taylor Sheridan shows and the rest of them, I'm kind of like, eh. But 1883, 1923, I think are brilliant shows. I love them, especially 1923. And you were in season one as well. I think you did 3 or 4 episodes, and now you have...
I think I was in 2. For some reason, I'm credited for 3. Maybe it was 3, but yeah, it was towards the end of the first season.
Yeah, and you play Marshall Kent or Sheriff Kent?
Yeah.
Okay.
Marshall, U.S. Marshall, yeah.
All right, so I watched part of the first episode that's just dropped a couple days ago from season 2, and you just blow a guy away, and I love that. So... What? Tell us
couple
about
guys.
Tell us about 1923. What's that set like? What is that experience like? And do you love that role?
I do. I love the role. I'd met Taylor a million years ago in Sons of Anarchy when he was an actor before he got into writing. I haven't seen him. He hasn't been on the sets I've been on.
Okay.
The first season of 23, we shot, the storyline was up in Montana, so we shot up in Montana. And then winter came on and it got so cold we couldn't film. So we had to pick up a little bit in California, just about an hour and a half north of LA.
Oh, nice.
To look like Montana. And then season two, we filmed, at least the stuff I was in, our storyline was all in Texas, because our characters are hunting down these couple people down in Texas and Oklahoma territory.
Okay. And you kind of told me that you have a, I don't know how you described it, a meaty part, or you play a sweetheart or something, which I took as, you know, you play such a good bad guy when you do it.
Thank you.
I don't know what you can say about it. I don't want you to do any spoilers, obviously.
No. I mean, people have seen the first season. I'm a U.S. Marshal who's pretty ruthless towards the Native Americans. And he's trying to track down this Native American girl who killed some nuns and priests. Yeah, she escaped from this school that she was at. And it was a Catholic school, they treated the natives horrendously. So this girl reacted and has escaped. So I'm essentially hunting her down.
That's great. That's interesting. That was one of my questions. Like, Taylor Sheridan is so prolific. I mean, the guy signed like a 12-show deal, and he seems like he's got 20 shows on the air somehow. And every time I watch one of his shows, he's credited as the writer. I'm like, I don't know how this guy does that. You know, that's really incredible. But what interaction have you had with him, and what's his style, if you can comment on that?
I haven't had interaction with him directly since that Sons of Anarchy. So my interaction with him is I read his script and get to do it. And I hear about him through the director and the first AD and stuff like that. And but he's been very good to me. I'm very appreciative.
That's excellent. Well, you're a benefit to him as well, my friend. Jamie McShane is my guest. He is an actor whose credits include Wednesday on Netflix, 1923, Sons of Anarchy, Bloodline. He's got a great resume. What else do you have coming up that we can look for you in?
Those three, 23. Oh, yeah, I did Bosch Legacy, too, last year. The first episode of Bosch Legacy this coming season in March.
Okay.
1923, I did like six episodes. I'm in Wednesday again, a little bit here and there. Season two, we filmed that in Ireland. Okay. And then Task, I'm in six out of the seven episodes.
Wow, nice. So, did you say?
Oh yeah, and I just won. I got a really cool like giant belt buckle with my name on it. I won best actor for a short at the Tucson Film Festival.
Whoa! And that was a gift, a huge belt.
Yeah,
buckle?
It's so funny. It's like so Western. And then I have a little. Well, no, I have a pretty good supporting role in a movie called Atropia. It was this little independent film, won Sundance.
Wow.
It won the grand jury prize at Sundance a month ago or a couple weeks ago.
You play Seagal in that? Seagal?
Yeah, I play, Seagal. I play like a army commander, kind of like Arlie Ermey in, what was it, Platoon?
Okay.
You know, kind of that, or Full Metal Jacket, I think it was.
Okay.
Full Metal Jacket. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Dude, that kind of
drill. I'm a drill. Thank you, drill sergeant.
That's fantastic. What kind of roles do you like to play the most? Do you have you're sometimes you're a good guy, sometimes you're a bad guy. What gets you excited when you see a script?
I don't care. I mean, my favorite role so far, Bloodline, I was one of my favorites, and that was such a great layered character. But this, what I did on Task, it was such a fun role because I'm kind of the head of this biker club, this motorcycle club. I'm kind of with the mother chapter. So I come down to look in on the local chapters. And it was so fun to play because they really let me do how I saw the character. And then, you know, the tweaking with the direction and the writing was so good. Like Bloodline, it just gave me, and Taylor and everything, just gave me so much to play with.
How do you, okay, so as an actor, you just said you got a lot of freedom. to play the character how you want. Is that, do you like that, or do you like parameters sometimes given to you by a director? Is it easy to play when you have limits, or when you can just kind of add your own stuff to the character?
It's both. I mean, if they, if like on Task, Bloodline, even 23, they, it's the character to me is already in the script, and then what can I do to bring it to life and find the layers and the humanity and, you know, whatever. And I get to, I've been fortunate enough to get to bring that sort of stuff to life and then have directors tweak me and the writer. And that I love. I love, you know, there's a great scene in Task. I'm not going to give it away, but the director wanted this other actor and I to be closer physically than we were when we rehearsed it. And it just changed the whole dynamic of the scene on as to how it ended up.
Nice. So do you ever get advice from a director or a writer or producer, whatever, where you're kind of like, oh, I don't know about this, and it wasn't good? And what happens when that happens? Like, do you feel secure enough? You work all the time. You're a respected actor. Do you feel okay speaking up in those situations?
I've had times, yeah, where I've spoken up and said, wait, I don't know if this quite feels right. And then the director was totally right. They're like, try it. Oh. I'm like, oh, yeah, that's great. So I haven't had too many that I can remember that the direction was wonky or anything. Okay. That doesn't stand out to me, no.
Oh, that's good. All right, you also, James, you mentioned you're in one episode of Bosch Legacy coming up, which is the final season, and that's one of my favorite shows. I love cop shows, and I like LA cop shows, and that to me is like just a phenomenal show. Love everything about it. You've had, you've been on that show before. You played Frank, what was your character's name?
Francis Sheehan, Detective
Francis
Sheehan.
Francis Sheehan. That was a great role.
Yeah, I'm still Detective Sheehan.
Yeah, right, because you, that's right. Okay, so, all right, now it's coming back to you. Remember what happened to your character. So that's nice that they can bring you back. I know Scott Clase has had a nice run, our friend, a fellow actor, a friend of yours too. So I was hoping to have him back on for Bosch Legacy, because he told me last time he was on the show, he goes, I cannot believe that I keep managing to get in every season. Like, what a great thing as an actor, right?
Yeah. He's great in it. He's
really good. Yeah. My guest is Jamie McShane. We'll have a couple more minutes with Jamie when we come back after this very short break. We're talking acting. We're talking 1923. His new show, Task, which drops in September, he says is one of the coolest things he's ever worked on. So look for that as well. We're coming right back on Nightlight with Pete Schwabba on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs across the network weekdays from 6 until 8 p.m. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Closing out this week's Civic Media Spotlight, we'll hear a segment from The Earl Ingram Show. Earl welcomed on Dr. Omar for another segment of In the Pharmacy. They talk about weight loss and how there is much more to it than drugs. Sleep, eating, and healthy habits all play important roles.
Welcome back to In the Pharmacy with Dr. Omar, the pharmacist on the Earl Ingram Show, 855-752-4842. And you can text us. Any question or comment is welcome as always. So, Dr. Omar, So we were talking about, you know, these great weight loss drugs that, you know, are all of a sudden going to disappear. And they're not a placebo, right? I mean, they really do work. And
they work very well. And they're very, so many health benefits, not just for weight loss, but also helps with blood sugar support mainly, but also helps with decreasing cardiovascular heart. It helps with heart health, helps with fatty liver disease, changes the body composition. It has also side effects because it can affect the gut health, can make you
constipated.
Nauseous, constipated, can affect that. There is some rare cases of people that had problem in their eyesight. They had problem in eyesight. But remember that there is millions of people that took those medications. So when you stop taking these medications, the food noise is going to start to come back. You're going to feel more hungry. You want to eat more. And then the challenge is like if you start to gain more weight and then you start to gain the weight that you lost, I don't want people to be depressed and feel like, oh my God, what is happening? So we have to prepare and kind of seek. Now it's time to seek the main cause. Why am I gaining weight? So it's a pathway. And that's why when we started 2025, we started it with a detox program, getting rid of toxins, because that's one of the answers that we're gaining weight because we have toxic bodies and we're not getting rid of those toxins on a yearly, weekly, monthly basis. We're not drinking enough water. So it is time to think about the diet soda or the soda that I'm drinking on a daily basis as my my drink. Soft drinks are kind of one of the worst things we can do to our health. So eating habits, changing it. So we have to think of the four main things to help us be in balance. How I sleep, how I eat, how I live, stress, and my relationships with people around me. Being in this balance might require us to be in therapy early, because we're not in therapy because we are lazy or because we have mental conditions. Everyone is trying to do everything they could, like the song that we hear in the beginning of the show.
Right.
People are trying hard to live, work, raise children, and do everything they can. But there is tools that's specific to you that you need to see and implement, all right? If I tell you, Earl, you need to hit the gym, you're going to go to the gym tomorrow because you have the strong will that you have. But your friends that used to work with you until they were 50, they're not going to hit the gym. They need help. They need support.
Right.
And that's why we need to seek that support to push us to do the things that we have to do in order to keep our health goals going. At Wiltopia, actually, I do weight loss consultations to create 3 months and 6 months plan, a comprehensive plan that helps people according to their health condition, according to the medications and supplements that they take, according to the gym that they go to. I create simple plans to help them maintain their weight and lose more weight. Because at the end of the day, I want you to lose weight, but I want you to preserve your muscle. I want you to go to the gym, but in your brain, in your mind, you think that I'm going to the gym to preserve my muscle mass, to keep my strength, but I'm not going to the gym to lose weight, because resistance training and working in the gym, it doesn't make you lose weight, but it makes you keep your muscle mass, which is very important part of your health. So weight loss is not just weight loss. Weight loss is kind of equals my health, my happiness, my strength.
You know, Dr. Omar, we sometimes think, okay, I've had enough. It's a New Year's resolution. I'm going to lose weight. I go to the gym. I work out. I'm at the gym 3-4 times a week. Not me, but people 3-4 times a week. And they don't change their eating habits or their sleeping habits, or they don't take supplements, And then 2 months down the road, they see that they've lost 3 pounds. And then they become frustrated. And they say, well, this is not going to happen. I can't. But as you stated, it's all of those things, all of those things combined that change your mindset, along with all of those other things that you talked about that are going to be the determining factor of whether or not you lose weight or not. Let's do this. So where to get compounding GLP-1? Does Omar offer consultation to help lose weight?
Until now, like pharmacies like Wiltopia, we still can offer the compounded version of GLP-1. It starts from $200, and we mark it up not too much to coast people. But that's for the coming 2 months. We still can offer it for the coming 2 months. And then I have also other plans that combines between compounds, supplements, of course, all the other things that we talked about, but it's not the end game. It has never been the end game at Wiltopia for weight loss. And that's why we have very strong support from the community for what we do, because we are here for the longer standing goal. So if you want to lose more weight and you don't need to be on GLP-1 agonist and you need more solutions, talk to us. Schedule a consultation, and you will find solutions.
All right, 855-752-4842. You're officially in the pharmacy with Dr. Omar, the pharmacist, on the Earl Ingram Show.
The Earl Ingram Show is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs on select Civic Media stations weekday mornings from 8 till 10. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.